This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, good morning. This is The Morning Run on BFM 89.9. I'm Chuang, joined by Xiaoning. In about 30 minutes, we'll talk to Nirmala Subramaniam, the manager of the Financial Education Department at AKPK, on financial management trends in this pandemic. But for now, we'll turn our attention to pensions and retirement systems, which brings us onto the poll on BFM this morning, asking of listeners, do you have alternative retirement funds in place other than EPF? And four choices, yes, no, EPF only, I don't have EPF, and don't know. Okay, which is for the people who live under rocks in this world, in this current day and age. But according to the Mercer CFA Institute for Global Pension Index 2020 released last week, Malaysia has ranked 19 out of 39 countries in terms of how well its retirement system functions.
And we're third behind Singapore and Hong Kong, and we're ahead of our regional peers, though, like Thailand and Japan. However, rankings say little about how prepared our institutions are to tackle the economic pressures caused by COVID-19, because the pandemic isn't just affecting our bread and butter issues today, but also impacting whether or not we'll be able to retire comfortably in the future. And given Malaysia's C-plus score in the index, which indicates some good features, but also major risks that could affect long-term sustainability, it is more timely than ever for us to consider how we can improve our retirement system and social protections for the elderly.
So for an assessment on the Malaysian retirement system, we speak to Dr. Amjad Rabi, the visiting fellow at the University of Malaya Social Wellbeing Research Centre. Thanks for joining us, Doc. Let's start with an overview of what makes a good national retirement system, given that there are so many different variations among countries.
There are a set of guiding principles for a functioning old age protection system, regardless of the country. The first guiding principle, which is very important, is to have coverage. And when we mean by coverage, it should be across all groups, whether you are in the formal sector, informal sector, among the vulnerable groups, among the bottom 40 in rural area, in urban area, poor, rich. You should have old age protection because it affects everyone. And the second element is the adequacy of benefit. You can have a very high coverage with low benefit. That doesn't work. So you really need to have a decent, adequate benefit for our senior citizens. And the third guiding principle is the cost containment and friendliness to economic growth. And what we've noticed, you know, like these guiding principles, like in any other public policy, they conflict one another. So you can achieve two of them, but not the three. So you can extend coverage, extend adequacy of benefit, but that will be at the expense of the cost containment element and the economic friendliness. So what we've seen that countries that have done exceptionally well, they somehow manage the mix in a way that they maximize a societal outcome. So they've reached a very high coverage with adequate benefit. At the same time, they kept their eye on the long-term developmental path of their economy.
So keeping these criteria in mind, how would you assess then the effectiveness of Malaysia's retirement system?
We start with coverage, and we have a very serious issue here in Malaysia, and we really need to look at it. If you would take like the number of the population within the working age, and when we say working age, the age 15 to 64, the standard, we look at this age group as the working age population. In Malaysia, there are 22 million in this working age category. But if you look at EPF's membership, it's about 7.2 million. We can add also to it that there are civil servants. We have in Malaysia about 1.6 million working in the civil service, and those are covered by QAP. It gives us about 8.8 million, which is still 40% of the 22 million. So 40% only coverage ratio.
So retirement coverage is actually less than half of the working population. What about in terms of benefit adequacies?
You couple this limited coverage issue with the inadequacy of benefit. If you remember back in 2018, EPF economists, they shared some statistics about their membership. What was striking that two-thirds at that time in 2018, two-thirds of EPF members at the age when they reached the age of about to withdraw from EPF at age 55, two-thirds of them, they have saving less than 50,000 ringgit. And 50,000 ringgit is very low, obviously. I mean, you can tell. But the same statistics showed that they withdraw, many of them, at age 55. And 50% of them, half of them, they exhaust their saving within 5 years. So they reach the age of 60 years old without any saving. So really, the old age protection is not there. It's not adequate. And, you know, when EPF was created back in the 1950s, life expectancy was about 57 years old. So you withdraw your money 55, you use them for 2 years, and you still have leftover to the family members. But what we have now, if somebody exhausted their saving by the age 60, they have another 20 good years to live. And what are they going to do with this? They will run into old age poverty. The lack of coverage and adequacy for old age pension will trickle down in all other systems. So all of them, they suffer from this spillover.
So there are obvious gaps in the retirement system, but how does COVID-19 add even more pressure than to the Malaysian retirement system?
If you would just think about it in terms of investment in pension funds, there is reliance on fixed income stream as it's stable usually. So the fixed income streams now, it's under pressure because of the historical low interest environment everywhere. So the fixed income stream is really compromised. You add to it, usually when you have low interest environment in normal days, you would have the stock market usually performing well. So at least one will compensate the other. But we are in a unique situation. The low interest environment is coupled with asset devaluations and uncertainty in stock exchange and investments. This is very compromising for the long-term health of pension plans around the world. And you know, like you would think of Malaysia now, EPF, when they announce the dividend. And this is really, we need to appreciate the fact that EPF investment teams, they're doing their best, but the time globally is very, very difficult. But it's also, we need to recognize that the system, EPF system, is what we call it defined contribution. So in other words, you get what you contribute. And now you have a situation that many people, that they are in and out from the labor market. What does that mean? You have a broken record of contribution. So some people, they are in the labor market, they don't have a job, unemployment. So when you have a broken record of contribution, you have less and less saving for old age.
So, Doc, what did you make of the decision to allow EPF holders to withdraw funds due to COVID-19?
Other countries also resorted to this option. Governments under pressure, they needed to act. And one of the issues here is like shortism. Shortism is quite widespread in public policy. You know, you need to get results quickly. One of the short-term decisions is to allow EPF members to withdraw. And we must admit that this is not the prudent. It's not the best option. We need to remember what's EPF or any pension plan. What's the mandate of it? The mandate of it is for old age saving. It's for the well-being of the senior citizen. So, yes, there is a lot of pressure related to the current situation, but the option to resort to EPF, I don't think it's the best option, given, you know, like the system itself, it's under pressure in normal days. We don't have adequate saving. EPF is not an ATM machine that people should withdraw. If government wanted to deal with this issue, there are other instruments that should be looked at.
What measures then would you recommend to the government in order to mitigate the fallout from the pandemic, and also bearing in mind that Malaysia is an aging population?
I think we need to recognize the problem that aging is happening, even we are now very comfortable. In 2000, we had 16 contributors or 16 working age population for every senior citizen. In 2020, not 16 we have for every senior citizen, we have 10. In 2050, we'll have only 4. So action needed to be done today when we are in a good position. We need to look at the new entrants into any system, whether EPF or COAP. The new entrants, they should, again, withdrawing at age 55 for a new entrants. Again, I'm repeating, a new entrants should not be permitted anymore. I mean, this for a new entrants. At time of independence, when life expectancy was 57, now it's 77. So we need really to recognize this fact. Second issue, for a new entrants, we should not also allow for lump sum. It should be an annuity. It should be a stream of income. And this is what should have been annuitized. This is for the new entrants.
And what about for those already in the system?
Now, for the folks who are already in the system, and this has become tricky because they enter with certain specific, it's like a social contract. You cannot break it middle of the way. We need to recognize this. Having said that, it can be packaged in a way that making it optional, I'm underlying the word optional, so to allow people that to start withdrawing instead of 55 from 60, and lock in some amount of money to be paid in monthly installment. Not all the money, but some for 10 years. And then at the same time, really, we need to look at the social pension element. So if people do that, which is very negative for many people, they don't want to withdraw at 60, they want it at 55, but it's optional. If you do that, you will be entitled to receive a social pension of 400 ringgit a month from age 70 till death for any senior citizen, whether in EPF or not in EPF. And this, I mean, we looked at how it can be financed. Actually, it will not cost much because the government spent a lot of money in senior citizen, but because of lack of coordination, it created lots of inefficiency. So, and if we do that, and this is the successful story of other countries in the system, they have the combination between the tax finance and the contribution finance. They are mixed together and it's synergy between them. In Malaysia, it's not that we don't have many things funded by taxes. There are 110 programs that governments run, and all of them, they are very costly. The problem that you don't have synergy. All what we propose is to create synergy between both of them.
That was Dr. Amjad Rabi, a visiting fellow at the University of Malaya Social Wellbeing Centre. And just listening to him and you know, trying to scrutinise it in terms of the substantive elements of what he's saying, it does seem as if the retirement analysts and in this country tend to focus on what's within the pot itself and trying to do with what's in the pot. My problem is, my issue with just looking at the pot is that it's not big enough. And I think that if we take a, this is just my point of view, right? If you take a more socialist perspective in terms of expanding the pot, one way could be to maybe even legislate, right? Highly profitable GLC-type companies who have been making huge profits off the country via like monopolistic business practices to then put more money a high percentage of the contributions into the staff accounts. And don't look at me funny, Shani, because you're looking at me funny, right?
I am giving you a bit of a glare, but I think what...
And the second thing is to cut down the corruption and the money saved from corruption and putting into high, very expensive projects, which is then siphoned out by connected people. That money saved goes towards people as well.
Well, maybe, but my perspective is more that you as an individual have to be responsible for your retirement. So more people have to sign up for it. Because I think what's worrying is that very few Malaysians, and he said 40% of all Malaysians only contribute to some form of retirement scheme. So, and this is going to increase because we know gig work is here to stay. So whether we should legislate that more people contribute is my way of looking at things the other way.
Okay, food for thought and fodder for discussion. Up next, we'll talk to Willie Pasek on Japan's plan to go carbon neutral. That's happening after the news bulletin. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.